This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Anatoly Karlin and Guillaume Durocher. We're going to be discussing the French elections. Great having you guys on the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
As always, excellent to be here.
Guillaume, you haven't been on the show yet. Can you give us a brief introduction about yourself?
Sure. Well, first of all, I wanted to say I had listened to your show back in the day when you had Greg Johnson on a few times. So I always enjoyed listening. It was part of my own red pilling experience. As for me, I'm a European historian and political writer. And you can find my stuff at especially Occidental Observer and Countercurrents.
The first time I found out about Greg Johnson was through the Robert Stark show, too, so on Voice of Reason. I think it was about Savitri Devi or Esoterica.
Guillaume, your accent sounds American. Were you born in America? You're of French descent?
No. In fact, I lived my whole life in Europe, but I've been to international schools, and yeah, I have a very North American accent.
So to start off with the election, I think a good way to start is right now. It's down to Marine Le Pen and Marcon, but I think let's sort of go over the original four major candidates. Le Pen, Marcon, Fillon, and Mélenchon? Is that how you pronounce that?
Well, Mélenchon would be funny.
Mélenchon.
And it's Macron is the other one, not Marcon.
And Macron, he's a sort of a phony centrist globalist candidate. I mean, he's basically the ultimate establishment candidate, and he probably epitomizes that more than any other candidate. And he's also the absolute worst. And then you have Fillon, who is, I guess, a conservative candidate. And then you have Mélenchon, who is the socialist. And Anatoly Karlin, you wrote about the candidates and analyzing them, and you did that sort of a ranking test which ranks your views with them, and obviously I mean Le Pen is the absolute best and Macron is the absolute worst, but how would you analyze the other candidates, the other major ones, Fillon and Mélenchon? What are their major flaws, and like what anti-establishment positions do they have?
Well, let's go from left to right. Mélenchon is the sort of communist candidate. He's got he's actually better on immigration, and he's more of a Russophile than the other leftists there. So I don't actually dislike him all that much. Apart from him being a communist.
When I took the political test, obviously Le Pen came in first, but I got Mélenchon above Fillon and above Macron.
Yeah, so going right, there would be Amon, who's the socialist candidate. He performed very poorly. He once said that there were too many white people in Brittany, that Durocher actually talked about that in his podcast with Jared Taylor. So he's a bit of a scumbag. Then there's Macron, who's the establishment candidate. So I mean, the media portrays him as an outsider, but he served as a minister under Hollande's government, and he worked at the Rothschild Bank. And as Steve Saylor recently wrote, he even attended the Bilderberg Conference in 2014. So that's what they mean by outsider. Rothschild Bank, Bilderberg Conference, all the correct tick marks in the correct places.
If you were to compare him to American politicians, would you say he's comparable to like Hillary Clinton or maybe a Michael Bloomberg?
I'd say he's some sort of hellish mixture of Hillary Clinton and Jeb, to be honest. But I mean, Durocher would probably have a more nuanced viewpoint on this.
No, I think that's a pretty good one that you got.
And Fillon is the conservative candidate.
Uh-huh.
And how would you compare him? I mean, well, first of all, he's actually endorsed Macron, but I do think a significant number of his supporters will back Le Pen. And, I mean, he has criticized immigration. Would you say he's kind of comparable, like, the French equivalent of, like, a Ted Cruz?
I was about to say that.
I would say he's a little bit better than Ted Cruz, probably. Very hard to say. Very hard to say. I don't know what he would have done if he'd gotten into office. I mean, he had said some interesting things on foreign policy, basically saying that we need to work with Assad to destroy ISIS, that we need to work closely with Russia and get rid of the sanctions against Russia. And he wanted to change the French constitution so that the parliament would have to affirmatively vote every year if they allow any immigrants into France. So you would have to affirmatively vote quotas authorizing annual immigration, which is a pretty radical thing from a mainstream politician, an interesting mechanism. But, you know, it's a typical conservative in the sense that the French center-right conservatives often promise interesting things like reducing immigration or even abolishing birthright citizenship. Nicolas Sarkozy got elected by, you know, pandering to FN voters with, you know, themes of tough on crime, tough on Islam, but in the end, they always cuck out.
Yeah, in the end, he was talking about the necessity of métissage, right?
I remember that.
Yeah.
If you sort of analyze the demographics of the different supporters, Le Pen's strong support, it's a coalition of working class voters in the French Rust Belt in the northeast, and also the south of France, which is much wealthier. I mean, I was actually kind of surprised by that at first, that Le Pen had such strong support there, because I generally think of, like, wealthy coastal areas, just like looking at here in mm-hmm. California, as being ultra liberal. And it's interesting, her support was fairly strong in the south of France. And then Fillon's support is mostly kind of older, mostly among, like, the elderly, like old conservative types. And then you have Mélenchon, who got support in some leftist rural areas, and he also got support in the heavily immigrant suburbs where there's a lot of poverty outside of Paris. And then Macron's support, I'd say, based on the analysis, it's a coalition. You have wealthy people living in central Paris, but also a lot of people who are just kind of like wishy-washy moderates who don't necessarily support his agenda. They just like the idea of not voting for a quote-unquote extreme candidate. Anatoly, you did write about an analysis of the voters. Would you say that's an accurate portrayal?
I think so, yes. I agree with that.
Well, we could maybe say something about the Macron supporters. Just that in terms of the age profile, it's remarkably constant. It's about a quarter of each age group, young, middle age, and old, supporting him. And the main factor is that they are overwhelmingly urban and quote-unquote educated. So basically, the more educated and privileged you are, the more you support Macron.
Mm. Yeah, comparable to sort of the white, basically the white Hillary voters.
Yeah.
And then Mélenchon's demographic, would you say, is closer to Bernie Sanders? Though actually, Mélenchon, I have more respect for him than I do Bernie Sanders, because he's refusing to back Macron.
Well, yeah. I think the lots of the so one of the polls had 37% of France's Muslims voting for Mélenchon. So that's a bit different from Bernie Sanders, actually, in that Bernie Sanders was white leftist, whereas Hillary Clinton was actually the minorities.
Yeah.
So who do the different minority groups in France, I mean, the major ones are obviously Arab Muslims and Africans, but there's a number of other ones. Who do the minority groups tend to favor at the in both the primary and obviously the general?
So usually the minorities support the Socialist Party en bloc. And it was always a very simple vote because there was a two-party duopoly in France with the conservatives and the socialists for something like almost 40, 50 years. And that it seems to be breaking down now. So now the Muslim vote was split between Mélenchon, who, as Anatoly said, got the biggest share, but they also voted for Macron, and they also voted for Hamon, the socialists, as a sort of legacy vote, with very, very few going to the right. So they're all voting liberal or left.
I think the new chairman, who he stepped down, but his name is Jalk. I think he is of, isn't he of a Middle Eastern background, but probably Christian?
Oh, I don't know. Could be. Of the FN, you mean?
Of the Front National. His name is Jalk.
Yeah. They have, you know, some secular Muslims in the FN. They have some Lebanese Christian types. Yeah, I don't know about the Jalk guy.
Oh, I think he's like of a Lebanese Christian background.
Yeah.
How do other minority groups, like the smaller groups, like say Asia, there's the main ones are the Africans and the Muslim Arabs. Then you have groups like you have Ashkenazi Jews, North African Jews, and then you have Asian groups. I mean, those groups are smaller. How do they tend to vote?
I don't know so much about those smaller groups. I can speak for Jews who actually are a bit different from American Jews. It's not uncommon for them to vote support the conservative candidate. I don't know if we know how they voted this election, but previously might even have been a majority voting for Nicolas Sarkozy. And I believe Israeli French citizens living in Israel, who would be overwhelmingly Jews, supported Fillon. And I think the reason for that is you've had spillover of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict into France, and you have Muslim anti-Semitism and crime against Jews in France. And so while Jews, by instinct, and certainly I would say the Jews who are in the media, tend to more be supportive of the center-left and of liberal causes, much of the Jewish base and the ordinary Jews tend to support conservative. But I think most, however, are very anti-FN.
What about someone like Eric Zemmour? Would you say he's an outliner?
I would say he's a relative outlier. I mean, he's a very good pundit overall. He's certainly the best mainstream pundit that we have. He is Jewish. He is of Sephardic descent. His parents and maybe himself were basically ethnically cleansed from Algeria during the Algerian Revolution when the French were kicked out in 1962. And so he has promoted, basically a kind of French nationalism in the media. I've written on him, like he's an interesting figure. He's even been critical of the Jewish lobby in France, which is quite refreshing. He has a bit of a double standard with Islam because he says that Islam is not compatible with the French Republic, but Judaism is, which I don't agree with. He basically is supporting the FN. I don't think he has ever said that, because you cannot operate in the French media system and support the FN. You will simply be fired because we live under democracy. But all of his talking points are more or less FN talking points, and he's pretty much working for an FN conservative coalition, which I think would be very sensible.
While we're speaking about Reuters, by the way, do you know how Michel Houellebecq votes or supports?
I don't know. I don't know if he's ever talked about that.
Okay.
I think he cultivates a certain mystery.
Anatoly, do you want to comment on how the different demographics vote? Have you studied that extensively?
I mean, I had an article about it, and I said that As we discussed, the really big division amongst ethnic French is between the educated and the not so educated, just as in the US, just as in Russia, actually. But it seems to be this very global pattern in which the lower income, less educated groups are starting to vote nationalist, and the better educated ones. So, as one example, there was this district in Paris, the 11th arrondissement, which hosts the Bataclan Theater, which was the site of the 2005 terrorist attacks. And Marine Le Pen got something like 4% there. So that's pretty remarkable in some ways, I think.
Pilater, do you want to comment on that Front National politician I just sent you to?
Yeah, that's interesting because I think we were talking this before that he's married to a Japanese woman.
Oh, Bruno. Yeah, Bruno Gollnisch.
And he has three children, which is interesting because we could be talking – because I was interested in Le Pen's – you know, Le Pen is up in there. And it reminds me of something that's happening with Trump where it's more of this civic nationalist stance. And it's like I guess this whole multicultural thing goes in where it's like, well, you can't be racist because you have a non-white wife and you have this. And I guess – like you just said before, if Jews are going to vote more on conservative, then Le Pen has pretty much a good chance if there's this weird civic nationalist background. But then again, how authentic is she to the message of just, you know, French nationalism?
Yeah, I see that kind of as a... Well, there's a full-on colorblind civic nationalism, which is like... I'd say Nigel Farage and UKIP fits that category. Then you have the hardline ethno-nationalists like Jobbik in Hungary. I get the impression that the Front National is trying to find some kind of a nuanced balance between the two.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk a bit about FN ideology if you want.
Yeah, I'm not that aware about the French National of much about it, but I'm guessing that through a Trump stance, you know, it has something to do with civic nationalism unless it's completely different.
Yeah, it's, I would say, a bit more coherent as an ideology than Trumpism, which is really more an instinct, I guess. So it is definitely 100% civic nationalist at this point. It's about assimilation. It's about miscegenation also, ultimately. It's about breaking down.
She's come out in favor of a pretty much total moratorium on legal immigration. If you compare her to Trump, sure. I mean, sure, some of Trump's rhetoric was harsh in the primaries, but Trump's pretty much keeping the status quo on legal immigration and doing a little bit of stuff to crack down on illegal immigration. But for the most part, I'd say Trump's immigration policies are actually pretty mild. Le Pen's actually calling for a complete repatriation of illegal immigrants and practically a complete moratorium on legal immigration. So I'd say that's fairly strong.
No, I think it is the best we have because it would put a tourniquet on the problem if her policies were done, because she would get rid of birthright citizenship. She'd restrict immigration to, I think, 10,000 net immigration, so you can interpret that how you will. She would also ban dual citizenship for non-EU citizens. So, you know, I mean, it's a good start. It won't keep a lot of people happy because it would mean that you'd have all the people already here, you know, treated as French citizens who just need to assimilate and adopt our values. And then they're as good as Jacques and Pierre, you know, which is maybe not realistic. And also because it's hard to tell how many people there are already here. We don't have good ethnic statistics like we do in the English-speaking countries. So, you know, you get estimates of, say, how many French births are, you know, African/Muslim. We don't really know. But it's already reached such a high level that maybe down the road, civic nationalism is probably not the way to go.
What do you see as a Le Pen success in the general election, appealing to both Fillon's voters and Mélenchon's voters?
As in, what is she doing to do that, or
how much can she appeal to them? Say, on with Fillon, I do think a significant number of it, some of his voters are squeamish about voting for her, but I think a significant number will vote for her on the issues of immigration and radical Islam. And then with, I do think she can also, I mean, she is appealing to a lot of former socialists. You saw that with, there was speculation about Bernie Sanders supporters voting for Trump. Some of them did switch over, but I think the number may have been relatively small. But I do think you could see a significant number of like a working class Mélenchon voters voting for Le Pen based on her strong economic populist message. And on economics, I would say Le Pen is probably significantly too, I mean, she's probably far to the left in economics than Trump is.
I'm. Can I just interject that I'm actually really skeptical about that, because speaking about the so-called Bernie Bros, in the end, only 10% of Bernie supporters defected to Trump, 90% stayed with Hillary Clinton.
And yeah, in fact, that's what
and in fact, according to opinion polls, 12% I think of Mélenchon voters are planning to go to Le Pen. The others are planning to go to the establishment candidates. But I don't know, Dudashir might have other opinions. What do you think?
No, I think you're right. There has been a line of trench thought linked to this writer, Alain Soral, who I was and am quite influenced by, who believed that you could do a left-right-wing alliance with the FN based on those social economic issues. And I mean, because if you look at the FN's program on the economics and the foreign policy, it actually agrees to a significant extent with Mélenchon's program. But in practice, there seems to be something in the leftist brain that they're defined by their hatred of the right wing. So it doesn't matter how much you agree. For them, there are fascists out there, and they do not want anything to do with them. So she will get the blue-collar voters, because they're not really voting that much for Mélenchon anyway. I think his supporters are mostly teachers and minorities and that sort of thing. And instead, she will get those working-class voters, which the FN has had for a while, and she has a good shot of getting sort of normal conservative voters. And I have to say, she has been doing really well since she has gone to the second round. Basically, every day you've got a lot of attention on her, and she's going out and meeting ordinary people. So she's going out seeing fishermen. She's on the boat. They're taking pictures. You know, she picks up fish and octopus. The day before, she went to the Whirlpool factory, which is being shut down. 300 people losing their jobs. Macron had really a bit of a crisis. He had to rush there to not be upstaged, and in particular because one of his advisors, Jacques Attali, has said that the shutting down of this factory, offshoring, was a anecdote. You know, it was just like a minor detail. It wasn't a big deal. And so I'm not sure how the average French person sees it, but I think she really has a good shot at getting a lot of these conservative voters. Probably not enough to win, but nonetheless.
Yeah, Anatolia, you wrote that article recently called The French Black Pill. Are you extremely pessimistic about her chances of winning?
Well, the betting markets are giving her 20%, which isn't that bad, and I've learned to sort of trust the betting markets because they've been better than the pollsters, although the French pollsters have been very good as well, actually, unlike the British and American pollsters. But, I mean, I did some back-of-the-envelope calculations just based on voter preferences, like what percentage of Mélenchon's and Fillon's voters will go over to who, and that comes out to about 40-60%, and that's also what the Macron versus Le Pen direct polls indicate as well. So that's a huge margin. I mean, 20 percentage points isn't the 5 percentage points that were involved with Brexit or Trump. And I mean, Trump did end up losing the popular vote for all that by 3 million votes. So it's going to be a huge upset, obviously, if she does win. I mean, I certainly hope she wins, but I'm don't think it's going to happen.
Guillaume, are you also pessimistic about her chances of winning?
Yeah, this is why everybody's on a downer this time, you know, because there's no real positive surprise. I mean, she's going to do a lot better than her dad did in 2002. And actually, for the first round, I made the prediction that Macron would not do so well and that she would finish first because of an effect we have in some French polls of the shy FN voter. But in fact, I was wrong, and Macron did well. He got, I forget, but, you know, something like 22, you know, plus 20% of the vote. And Le Pen was quite behind him, actually. So she got to the second round, but, you know, nothing to write home about, basically. Mm-hmm. So those are two black pills because, I mean, it means that a lot of people found this, you know, used car salesman Macron compelling, even though he's basically selling Hollande 2.0 policies, which haven't really worked for the last 30 years.
Well, as far as if you compare him to Hollande, Hollande did raise taxes on the wealthy. I think he's similar in most issues, but I'd say he's probably the only difference is he might cut taxes on the rich.
It's really hard to say what Macron will do because he's very mushy in terms of he's very mushy. He's like he's the French establishment consensus, and I will say there is a white pill because the although her voting bloc has not grown that much over the last 15 years, and although Macron has a core of supporters, which is significant, the demonization doesn't work like it did in 2002. In 2002, people literally thought that the Front National was a fascist party and we all have to stop it. Mm. And so in the second round, 80% voted against it. This time, it's much more soft core, I would say. There isn't a feeling of crisis. And in fact, there's been an interesting development. And so we'll see maybe Marine getting 40% of the vote, which is nonetheless a doubling of what her dad got. And also, you've seen some mainstream politicians either decline to support Macron, so to basically abstain.
Decline to support Macron?
That's right. Mélenchon has so far declined to support Macron. And you've seen some mainstream politicians actually come out in support of Marine Le Pen as part of a bigger coalition. And that is unprecedented. And it would be it's very interesting if we see a new political constellation in France with the globalists around Macron, so the center-left, center-right globalists around Macron, and then on the right, and with the more identitarian center-right politicians coalescing around the National Front. That would be very interesting.
Yeah, I know the one guy you're talking about, he's this politician, Agnon, who's a mainstream right-wing politician who endorsed Le Pen. But I think this kind of concept of like the far, of Le Pen being far right is totally a misnomer. I mean, she represents more, I'd say, like a... Well, Macron... Mélenchon is like the far left. Fillon is maybe the right-wing or conservative candidate. Then Macron represents the sort of... phony establishment, globalist center, and then I wouldn't say Le Pen is right-wing. She represents this kind of radical, centrist, populist nationalism, and she's incorporating a lot of views from the left, views that would be considered, especially something you don't really see that much in American politics. Her economic policies are fairly... left-wing on many issues, and I also sent you that article about her support for things like environmentalism, and that's a trend with a lot of European nationalist parties incorporating views of the left. I see that as a great trend, but you don't really see that as much in American politics. Like, Trump touched on those issues, but Trump is kind of, for the most part, close to a kind of a mainline Republican, but what are your thoughts on Le Pen adopting a lot of these issues, issues of that have traditionally been associated with the left?
Well, I think it's been a working strategy to an extent, and I do think it's good that she's a bit more. I mean, the Republic. It's still a tragedy, and I used to be a liberal, so you know that side of me showing that the nationalist movement, such as it is in America, has to be attached to the Republicans because they are still the party at the end of the day of big business and you know my SUVs and. Spending money, and you know, it's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the Republican Party is full of stupid scumbags. I mean, looking at things honestly, and I mean, obviously, it's not great to be associated with them. But indeed, what other choice do we have?
Even if Marine Le Pen was to win, I'd always think that maybe some, I guess, Israel supporting or at least the war in Syria would continue further. You know, it's like there's these voting for these populist and nationalist parties, but instead of getting isolationism, you're just having this new redesign of just the same policies, but just to satisfy the democratic masses that it could mean something else. That's how I feel. So if Marine Le Pen wins, I always feel like, will she be honest like what Trump's doing, or will she do everything else from since George W. Bush, what's, you know, he been doing?
Yeah, it's really hard to say, but I think the key crucial difference is Le Pen has her own political party. Trump, because he's a Republican, he's forced to work with the Republicans. And, I mean, the Republican Party, as Anatoly said, is totally horrific. I mean, their platform is horrific, but they don't even follow their own platform. At least Le Pen can have her own political party, which has stronger principles. So that's a benefit. As far as the youth vote goes, does she have a significant number of younger voters? I know Fillon's voters are mostly older. What is the breakdown of voters, say, under 30 or under 40?
Yeah, I saw some recent stats. The FN does pretty well with young voters, but Mélenchon got more this time, and it was something like a 30-20 split. So, yeah, by no means a blowout.
So, yeah, I saw that poll breakdown, the breakdown of that poll. The pretty disappointing thing, I would say, is that actually her best performance was amongst the 30-year-olds. So a few years ago, there were these series of polls which saw that that support for the FN was highest amongst the young people, which was especially impressive because I mean, we know that Muslims are also, well, minorities also become concentrated amongst the younger generations. But nonetheless, it was monotonically increasing with greater youth. But now you're getting more of a sort of bell curve where support starts to like fall off amongst the youngest people, and that's not a very good trend, I think.
Yeah, I thought I'd say something about what would happen if she actually won. We have no idea, really, but I, especially after Trump, am not optimistic because I actually thought Trump had more autonomy than she did because he would mess with the media. Like, he would just break the rules, knock over the table. He did not care what they thought, and he was breaking new ground in terms of discourse, which is not the case for Marine Le Pen. She has pretty much stayed within certain bounds which are determined by the media. But he's been broken, apparently, over the last 2 weeks or so. And so now he's degenerating into something else. And so Marine Le Pen, if she came in, everyone would mess with her. Like, the whole system, the whole party class, the whole media class would be messing with her constantly. So her only hope would be if she had support with the center-right somehow, that if she could have a coalition of some type, because it's not even clear who are going to win the parliamentary elections, which will come after the presidential elections. And also her EU program is not really clear. I mean, it looks like she would come into office and then we'd have this, you know, big prolonged negotiation about getting out of the EU, about breaking up the euro, and then have a referendum on that. I mean, all of that is kind of not really relevant, and it would be like the UK now, you know, all these pointless pseudo crises about Brexit. And the only positive light, though, is that you did see that shift beginning to happen among the Conservatives, because Fillon, as we said, did move to the right on certain things. Nicolas Dupont-Aignan, who is this small nationalist candidate, but a mainstream one, came out in support of Marine Le Pen. Other people have come out in support of her. And I think that's how we will get salvation. It's not going to be like by one party, you know, as a fluke coming into office. It will be as part of a wider social shift.
I mean, the one reason I'm more optimistic about, I mean, I agree with your points, but one possible reason to be more optimistic Le Pen is that her ideology has been pretty consistent, and whereas you might sometimes get the impression that on many issues Trump makes things up as he goes along, pretty much, or goes with his gut instinct, and perhaps if he's surrounded by, like back when he was campaigning, he was surrounded by Steve Bannon's people who were like feeding him all this populist nationalist diets. Now they've been sidelined by the neocons, and now you have the Kushners and the McMasters and the Mattises feeding him. So he just reacts to his surroundings in that sense, so which sort of thing you'd get if you essentially hijack an establishment party in service of a populist agenda, it might end up hijacking you back. Whereas at least as has already been stated, at least Le Pen has her own vehicle, so to speak.
Yeah.
Let's look at some of her policies some more. Her economic policies, also on social issues. She is I'd say fairly socially moderate. Another interesting trend in France, as I've read, that homosexual voters are actually a lot more conservative than American homosexual voters, who overwhelmingly support the left. Anatoly, how would you analyze Le Pen's overall policies, both on the social issues and the economic issues?
Well, this is such a huge topic. I mean, I agree on the economics. She is certainly to the left of the mainstream diet, as was Trump, I suppose. And although I should, in fact, one of the Russian national, one of the big Russian nationalists here, Yegor Trasvinyan, actually basically called her a commie and said that this is why the French were not voting for her. But he's got this pretty annoying neoliberal like streak, so he extrapolates his own ideology a lot.
Posted that chart that said France is much more supportive of socialism than Western countries.
So basically leftism is like economic leftism is much more of a is much more respectable in France than it is in the United States. I mean, the French are even more anti-capitalist than Russians, and Russians are still relatively anti-capitalist. That's according to opinion polls. This criticism just doesn't apply to her. And in fact, the socialist candidate, Amon, he was calling for a basic income, which I happen to support as well. I mean, that's one of his like. His one good idea, perhaps, but otherwise, they're really hard left. Those in France, but at least they promise to be hard left on the campaign trail. Once they get in office, I mean, Trichet will probably tell you more about it. But I recall that Hollande tried to establish his lower 90% income tax to the wealthiest or something, but then it was repealed by the courts, if I remember correctly. So I mean, few of it ends up translating into actual policy anyway. So I mean.
I think Mélenchon was advocating a 90% income tax on anyone who makes over 400,000 euros a year. I mean, I think that might be a little bit too steep,
Just that I don't support any of that at all. Actually, in a globalized world, it's just idiocy.
The problem that we have is that we've reached the point in France where any more economic equality pretty much just stifles the system and drives out the people with money, and those tend to be smart people and innovative people. So even though I, generally speaking, do not support, people having, I don't support oligarchs. I don't support people just, wasting their money on frivolous stuff. I don't support people being like impoverished. But on the other hand, in France, we've kind of reached the limits of that. And in the case of Mélenchon, he's in the EU and he's in the Eurozone. And those have certain rules which, are neoliberal and ordo-liberal. And they're not compatible with communism. So it would be Syriza times 20, which would be really fun and funny to watch. But I don't think it would work.
Yeah, it's about finding the right balance. And on the other hand, I think you do have to find that right balance, because I think Trump's proposals for massive tax cuts for billionaires. Mm. I think that's insane too.
Yeah.
But with this whole issue of taxing the wealthy, you have the kind of populist argument that you have this parasitic oligarchy who is out of touch. They're not loyal to the nation, and they're pushing all these harmful policies. And then their attitude is like, yeah, let's go out and like punish them by raising their taxes and make them pay their fair share. That's the basic populist argument. I'm both a nationalist populist and also left-wing populist as well. And then there's the conservative argument that if you tax the wealthy, they'll just get up and leave. And I mean, a populist can say if they're not loyal to the nation, then good riddance. But that's also taking revenue out of the country. I mean, I was reading that France surpassed China as having the largest number of millionaires leaving the nation.
Oh, wow.
I think both of those arguments have some validity to it.
Yeah.
I mean, in a country that is rapidly becoming not only like extremely left, very leftist, but also is becoming ethnically foreign pretty much. I mean, I wouldn't really want to shove my money there either, to be quite honest. I mean, I can understand that, though ironically, the sorts of people who do vote, who do leave France and become these ruthless cosmopolitans, they tend to overwhelmingly support Macron anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's really retarded in some ways.
Guillaume, have you heard of that trend of people talking about leaving France because the situation's getting so bad?
Or what about leaving for Canada?
Maybe. Do you think that's kind of overhyped?
Do you mean if Le Pen won or in another instance?
I mean, that's a feasible possibility where liberals threatening to leave.
Yeah.
Just the overall trend of people talking about leaving just because of the threat of terrorism and crime and all that.
Not so much, I would say. You have some stories about Jews going to Israel because of the anti-Semitic crime that the Muslims have brought, but I even think that's overblown. It's not very many, and actually they usually keep one foot in France and one foot in Israel because it's only a 3-hour flight. What you have seen a lot of, which is unprecedented pretty much in French history, by the way, is the exodus of educated parts of the population to sometimes other parts of Europe, sometimes the United States, sometimes to Canada, and especially to London. Because they are simply they're just following the economic opportunities. And so you have this French contingent in this, deracinated global superclass, which is emerging. But it's a brain drain, and it's very disconcerting if you're a French nationalist to have that brain drain. And you're getting you're replacing your indigenous population with these, unskilled third world immigration. I mean, it's simply crazy.
I mean, Robert, when you referenced about, I mean, I've came across instances in college where some of the feminists will say, I'm going to move to Canada when Donald Trump gets elected. Rather, this is just something...
it's rhetoric, but the number that does is pretty minuscule.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I have seen two people change country because of EU piety. And so one guy, an Italian guy, but who happened to be living in Austria, was really shocked and horrified by the Brexit vote. And so because of that, he moved to Brussels and is now working for the EU. So you do get some people who are really driven to change their lives for ideological reasons.
What are some of the overall demographic trends in France? Obviously, the big one is with the growing size of the Muslim population. Another thing I heard is, I read that France actually has one of the highest birth rates in Europe. Is that because of immigration, or do native-born French have a higher birth rate than, say, like Germans or Italians?
So it's a combination of both. France has, I think, the last check, about a 2.1 birth rate, but that includes foreigners. And I think if you subtract the foreigners, it becomes more like 1.8. Mm-hmm. So that means the foreigners are having a lot of kids. But nonetheless, 1.8 for native citizens is pretty high still by European standards. The trend that you usually see, France is not being transformed in a monolithic way, because we get a lot of European immigrants also. So we get both European immigrants and African and Muslim immigrants. The Europeans tend to have a fertility rate roughly the same as the native French. They tend to converge in terms of their educational and economic performance more or less to the same level as the French. So that's the Poles, the Italians, the Portuguese, etc. The Africans and Muslims do not converge across generations. We have statistics for that. They tend to clump at the bottom and do poor educationally, have lots of unemployment, lots of social housing, etc. And then the Africans and Muslims in the first generation tend to have a lot of kids. So they tend to both be young immigrants, and they often have more kids than they do in their home country. So that's the case, for example, of Algerians. First-generation Algerians have more kids in France than they do back home because they have more support here. And then in the next generations, it tends to fall and converge at the French level. But since they're young and since they're having more, this is leading to a drastic change of the population, which you can really see in the cities. There is simply a population replacement happening, although the French media deny it. Just as you're seeing across Western Europe, I mean, in the UK also. But I say all this with the caveat that we do not have official ethnic statistics in France, and so we don't have as clear a picture as we do, say, as in the UK.
Actually, I'd like to just ask Dudashir a couple of questions. By the way, this something that interests me. If you tried to gather ethnic statistics in France, will you actually be criminally prosecuted for that, or is it just the state that is not allowed to do that?
I don't know, because we occasionally get, for example, that poll which asks Muslims how they vote. I guess mm-hmm. that was a private poll, and there was no suggestion that was illegal, so I actually don't know the answer to that.
Okay. And another question. So I noticed that I spent a few months in London, and I have a couple of relatives in Britain. And one thing I noticed is that the Africans there, they have a tendency to convert to Islam over time. So it's fascinating. But then, those central industrial cities, which have been undergoing this population displacement. Program like the French suburbs have been, a lot of the blacks there have actually apparently just simply converted to Islam. I was wondering, is any of that happening in France?
Yeah, you definitely, I mean, in the UK, definitely. I mean, yeah, I see these Jamaicans, for example, converting to Islam, finding an identity in that, and then more or less getting involved in terrorism and crime.
Oh yeah, like the recent terrorist at the Westminster, yeah. London. I think his mom was English, his dad was Jamaican, but he converted to Islam in prison. There was that shoe bomber a while back who was from that same background and converted to Islam.
Yeah. So for France, I don't know if it's as common. You get a few people converting to Islam, and you even get a few natives converting to Islam. So I think you see it with black people also, but I haven't seen it as much in the high-profile cases.
There's something interesting. F. Roger Devlin said something about Islam where in the Middle East where, because, you know, he talks about sexual politics, he said that some of the lower-class Muslim men basically go jihad and blow themselves up because they want to go to heaven and get, like, all these virgin women. And so when I think that in a Western view with all these, I guess, these lonely lone wolf serial killers or whatever, you know, do you think this is something to do maybe that there are people converting to Islam because their lives are boring or they're not getting the women that they need or there's some sexual frustration? Or, you know, it's not just this multicultural, I'm going to change something new stuff white people like. It's more like a angry thing going on. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, it's hard to generalize about the terrorists because, I mean, some of them are educated, some of them are, like, upper class. I mean, they all, you know about Osama bin Laden and that kind. But the recent terrorism has, I really think, been done by misfits.
Yeah.
You know, it's been done by these guys who, you know, are losers, don't have their lives together, and Islam is a kind of identity for them and a kind of... an answer. And so they just say, okay, well, this is one way of ending your life, you know. But, and to be fair, I mean, some of them do seem mentally unstable. But I think this is also the kind of population that you're importing. I mean, you're importing this population and they, you know, it's not, if they have, you know, they're somewhat inbred, they have lower IQs, and they're very tribal. I mean, this is a very tribal... The Middle East is the most tribal part of the world. So the percentage of people who, you know, once they're are apt to go off the rails, it does not need to be that big for people to, you know, start running you over with trucks and stabbing you and bombing you.
Because I want to make reference, because if feminism is so, like, anti-male, I'm guessing that the people who are these... men that can't tame feminists just convert to Islam and blow up people. So that's another. Yeah,
I don't know. That's an interesting theory. Yeah,
I think another reason is that Islam, or especially Islam, is simply cool in a way that cuckolded Christianity nowadays, or secularism, or like those transgender freak supporting. The mainstream ideologies just aren't cool in the way that Islamism is. So they've got really catchy nasheeds, for instance, about how they're going to like cut off the heads of the kafirs. And I mean, I could see somebody with like a surfeit of personality or a sabia, being drawn to that sort of memeplex, just to find meaning.
It's a great. Rationalization of you know, racial hatred also. I mean, it's like it's a unifying thing, you know. Basically everybody who hates Europeans can just go for Islam. That can be a very, you know, it's a good yeah.
With these kind of a future predictions of for France, do you see a more like a Welbeck submission scenario where an Islamic theocracy comes in? Or do you see more of France turning into a society more like Brazil? Which of the, I mean, if things aren't changed, which of those scenarios is more plausible?
You know, that's a really good question. Submission was unrealistic as a book in terms of the time frame, you know, because it was imagining this over the next 5 years or so. But it maybe was a reasonable prediction for, you know, maybe 50 years from now. I find it really hard to decide on that question because if we're being honest, I do think that the immigrants who come will embrace our consumerist culture. You know, they will assimilate to an extent, not really assimilate in the sense of converging in terms of performance, converging in terms of, behavior and things like that, or even mixing that much. but they do put it this way: they will embrace rap. You know, they might stop going to the mosque and start embracing rap. And
well, this ties back to what Billiter was saying, but I read a comment on the blog where the immigrants, like from the Arabic and African Pakistani backgrounds, the ones who are the kind of outcast and losers turn to radical Islam to feel powerful, and the ones who are more socially successful turn to kind of the American style pop culture, like the rap culture. Would you say that's an accurate observation?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the losers also probably embrace the rap, but you know, maybe they're not as bad as the Islamist ones.
I don't get. To be honest, I just have to interject. I don't see where you're coming up with this dichotomy between rap and Islam. I mean, Islamic State has some pretty good drops, you know.
Oh yeah, okay.
I think it's more like the non-white coalition versus the white people, and everyone's on a non-white coalition is basically black, Asian, any other non-white, and they gotta hate whitey. And so that basically trajectory in the baby boomer generation, which is so cliche now, it's kind of just this weird mainstream version of like in America, you're now, since some years after 9/11, you see the popularity of the Muslim coming into the country and pretending we've been a quote-unquote oppressed minority, just no one has ever noticed. And rather, this has just been liberal programming of just putting a keynote speaker as a Muslim everywhere. And so I get really skeptical when I see young kids saying, I'm a Muslim. I'm like, no, you're not. You're just a liberal trying to signal people.
And I actually see that as a recent trend in America. It used to be that it was extremely controversial to make fun of, to say derogatory comments about, say, black people, but it was more socially acceptable to make fun of Arabs or Muslims. And I even noticed that still in the Bush era, but it's gotten to the point now where the kind of SJW culture is really pushing this pro-Muslim agenda, and I haven't seen that before. That seems to be a more recent phenomenon.
I don't even think Team America, remember that Trey Parker film? A long time ago, Durka Durka G Mama Jihad, and they would just do Muslim slurs throughout, and North Korean terrorism. I don't even think that would pass today because the social justice warriors would get so mad at that. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I'm totally divided. I really don't know the answer on Brazil versus submission. I think you can make a case for both. You'd have to really look at how the sociological dynamics go in the long term, because I mean, you can imagine a scenario where it is like Mexico or Brazil, where you just have these big underclass, but are basically, you know, in the national culture and not politicized in any sort of way. They're just dangerous, you know, they're just there and dangerous, and you want to get away from them. But you could also imagine Islam being a federating force and giving them identity, giving them coherence. I mean, I am skeptical of most of the counter-jihad stuff. I think people overstate the extent to which Islam is organized. I think it's mostly random. Like, I'm not so much random, but it's disorganized violence more so than any consciousness. But it's very hard to say, actually. I don't have the answer.
Could I just point out, I think that it's not going to be Brazil, and I don't think it's going to be submission/Arabia. I think we should look at the one country that in the 20th century actually has experience of going from majority Christian to majority Muslim. I think the likeliest scenario is basically Greater Lebanon, where you have these three groups. Well, in Lebanon, it's Sunnis, Shias, and Christians, and you have this multinational government, and you have prescribed those for each group even written into the constitution. So identically, so ironically, it's pretty you could say identitarian that way. And you also have these militias running about, and a pretty weak central army. And I mean, the militias there are more powerful, actually, in some ways than the national army. So I suspect you're going to get a large-scale version of that in a one potential dystopian future about half a century down the line.
Or you could see a scenario comparable to Israel, where you have a white population who's more nationalistic, like the Israelis, but then you have a large Muslim population, which is in these large ghetto enclaves that are kind of walled off, and like a lot of terrorists coming there as an operating base. So do you see kind of the Israeli scenario as another possibility?
Well, the Israelis are much more nationalist than Europeans. So, I mean, I think something like 50% want to physically remove the Arabs from Israel, according to opinion polls. That's first. And secondly, the fertility of the average Jew in Israel is 3 children per woman now, so which is equivalent to the average Arab. And I mean, Europeans, no European is leading at those sorts of rates right now. So I don't think it's. I mean, maybe in 50 years, the people who like produce children will produce those sorts of children, and perhaps. Europe will move more towards into that sort of direction, but that's not the case today, obviously.
And Anatoly, how would you compare France's future to some of the trends of America's future?
Oh, I think maybe Dulcia has more experience in between the U.S. and France.
I think we're on the same train. I mean, Anatoly did a good article on convergence between the U.S. and Europe. And, I mean, Europe is basically 30 years behind the U.S. And it's very sad to say because, I mean, America is lost to the founding population, which actually created the United States. And we cannot stress enough that the founding fathers created the United States specifically for European Americans and their posterity. It was very explicit. So we will lose the United States on the current trends. But Europe is just 20 or 30 years behind. And so we're all in this together, basically.
Before I wrap up the show, is there anything else you would like to add about the election?
Well, I have nothing to say on the election, but I'm very curious about these other possible talking points about automation and Assange. I thought that could be interesting to talk about because, I don't know, we're always on the ethnic angle, which is, of course, critical, but I thought maybe good to talk about some other issues, loosen our minds a bit.
Anatoly, do you have anything else to say about the election?
No, I mean, that's it. I mean, yeah, no.
It's been an excellent show. I would like to thank Anatoly Karla and Guillaume Dore. Shay, for joining us.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Thank you.